So this morning, our text is a familiar parable that Jesus tells. The parable of the prodigal son. And if you were to look before this passage, Jesus tells a couple other parables about a lost coin and some other lost things. And so in this case, the prodigal son is the lost son. But there are a couple characters here that I'd like you to be focusing on. So I'd like you to hear the word of the Lord, and then we'll have a children's story as we continue on. Luke chapter 15, verses 11 to 32. Jesus continued. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me a share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, and he set off for the distant country, where he squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and he hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I'll set out, I'll go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.'" So he got up, and he went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And he ran to his son. He threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father's killed the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could go celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your wealth with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fatted calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because your brother, this brother of yours, was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So, Lent. We're in the coming towards the end of Lent. And we've been talking about Lent being a time for forgiveness and a time for sacrifice, a time for giving. Today, we're going to focus on the fact that Lent is a time for grace. And Stephanie has wonderfully set up this whole theme of grace for us today. In our text today, there are three main characters. We have the son, the prodigal son. We have the older son. And, of course, we have the father. And I'd like you to think about which one you do tend to most relate to. Some may be able to relate to the father whose child has wandered away. You may be able to relate to the older brother who's been faithful and at home and trying to do the right kinds of things. Or you may be able to relate to the prodigal son, his one who has kind of wandered away from the Lord. And In these, we're going to be taking a look at those three characters today. And I want to start off, we'll start off with the prodigal son. He's kind of one of the obvious characters here. And in this, as Stephanie pointed out, this son, as we all are in need of, is in need of grace. Now, grace is something that it's used. The word is actually used in various ways. But as we talk about grace today, we're talking about. I have a definition here from a dictionary. I forget what those things are called. We don't use them anymore. I just click online and. But grace is defined as a disposition to be generous or to be helpful, to show goodwill. The one who is showing grace shows these things, this generosity and helpfulness and goodwill. Shows mercy, one who shows clemency or forgiveness. It's a favor rendered by one who doesn't need to offer that favor. Okay, and as we think about God's grace, or the Father's grace even, to the prodigal son, this wasn't any favor that he needed to offer to him, but he did. And it's a temporary immunity, this grace period that we sometimes talk about, or an exemption. It's sometimes referred to as a reprieve from the consequences of our sin or our behaviors. This is what grace is about, and this is what the prodigal son received from his father. This reprieve, this forgiveness, this acceptance back that was so undeserved. The prodigal son, he's one who, first of all, took advantage of his father's generosity. The father didn't have to give him his share, but he did, and he went and asking for it. And then the prodigal, of course, wasted all of his resources on wild living, it says. He says, and he found himself at the bottom of his life, at the very worst point and worst place where he could possibly be, feeding pigs of all things. And, of course, Jesus is speaking to a Jewish crowd as he's telling this story. And if you were left feeding pigs, that was probably the worst job you could ever have, as far as being unclean all the time. And not only that, but he was starving to death, thinking that maybe the best thing for him to do would be to eat the food that the pigs are eating. But he said even no one would even give him that food to eat. He found himself at the bottom of his life, at the ultimate worst place to be. And at this point, he does something that maybe still it would be something that would show a lowness of his life. He decides he's going to return to his father's house because there his father's servants are fed better than he is. And so he decides he's going to go back and not be asked to be a son again, but to be just a servant, a hired slave in his father's house. We may not find ourselves at the lowest place like that all the time, very often. And it could, but in each of our lives, we do have low points. We have points where it just feels like maybe the bottom has dropped out of our lives, or you know, you get news, or you find out that a physical problem, or maybe it's a loss of a loved one, and we find ourselves sometimes just feeling like there's nothing to stand upon. Sometimes it's because of the things that we've done, bad decisions we've made. Not always, but sometimes it is. And there are times when we also wander away from where God would want us to be. Sinful behavior that we decide that we're going to follow. Or it could be that we have simply just kind of lost contact with God. With no other choice, we find ourselves needing to return to the Lord. If we're all honest, we will recognize that we're all people who are at times in need of grace. Sometimes we're in need of God's grace, and sometimes we're in need of grace from other people. And so this is where the prodigal son is, this one who's wandered away. I'd like to move on, though. I'd like to move on to the older brother as another character here. Because maybe you relate more to the older brother, the one who's the more dependable one, the one who's worked hard, the one who's been faithful to his father, one who has tried to do what is right, and even going above that at times, to do even more than what's right. This brother was one who, when he heard his younger brother came home, was upset. And rightfully so. As Stephanie said, it wasn't fair. When people behave badly, and we know that they should know better, we often will have a righteous indignation. Say, this person needs to suffer some consequences. Maybe then they'll understand. Maybe then they will learn something, at least, from their behaviors. And we feel like this older brother. A little bit like this older brother. I have a video clip I'd like you to watch. See if you relate to this.
Every day I worked for my dad. Every day. I stuck around through the hard times, the good times, and everything in between. And my younger brother ran off to have a good time, partying, only thinking about himself. Well, I stuck around and worked, and went to school full time. If I wasn't in class or studying, then I was working to learn my dad's business. I didn't have time to slack off. I just wanted to make my dad proud. And why did I even bother? It was all just a waste of time. I never disgraced my family's name like my brother did, with words like reckless, lazy, and drunk. That's our family's name, my dad's name. No, I brought words like honor, commitment, work ethic. How about responsibility? Yeah, that's something my brother couldn't spell even on his most sober day. Year after year, I had my chances, my opportunities to leave, and I never took them, because I'm not irresponsible like my brother. The family business won't run by itself, you know? And what did it get me? A front row ticket to watch my pushover dad roll out the red carpet for my screwed up brother. Really? Are you kidding me? It's not enough that he blew through all my dad's money and brought shame to our family, but no, it's, come on in, son. Let's reward you for embarrassing yourself and the family. I slaved for years, never asking for one single thing from my dad. I guess I just figured that one day it would be worth it. But now my younger brother comes home, and he gets paraded around as the favorite, the chosen one, as though he were an only child. Do you know how much that hurts? I just don't get it. I tried to do everything right. I did everything right. Everything I was supposed to do. I guess it was all for nothing. I just don't get it.
Especially when the sinning person seems to get off without any serious consequences. Or worse, when they don't show remorse. Or maybe they don't recognize the pain that they've caused by their behavior. It seems that if they experience some punishment for their behavior, that maybe then at least, they might learn a valuable lesson. This is an understandable way to feel, as the older brother felt. But there's a problem with this attitude. As Jesus tells the story, we see the older brother not necessarily just as being the faithful one, but also one who is actually judgmental and unforgiving. One who is willing to let his relationship with his brother die in the name of justice or righteousness or fairness. And not only that, I don't know if you have sensed in the text and in what we just watched, but there's an attitude of jealousy and there's an attitude of anger. Anger at the Father for showing grace and forgiveness. It does seem unfair to him. The problem that we have as the older brothers, is that we want to tell God how to be just. And there's a pride and an arrogance in that. And so we look to the Father as the third primary character here, as a gracious Father, the most gracious Father, giving grace without question, really. Do you see how he responds to the prodigal son? He doesn't say, hey, it's about time. We've been worrying to death about you. Where have you been? He doesn't say, why have you treated me so badly? Why have you taken our name and run it through the mud? He doesn't even say, I told you so. Or, you know, you really got what you deserved. Instead, what does the father do? He sets aside all dignity. And he runs toward his father and embraces him, or toward his son, and he embraces him and kisses him. I can imagine tears in his eyes as he welcomes his lost son back home. Then he says, quick, to his servants, quick, bring the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet. These, by the way, are all symbols of what a son would wear. He's inviting him back to be a son. And then he says, bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast. Let's celebrate. Let's have a party. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is now found. This father is gracious, and he accepts his son back without question, without asking him to explain his behaviors. He just doesn't even wait for his son to say, I'm sorry, Dad, for what I've done. He simply welcomes him home. God is gracious. Our God is this gracious. And we, as followers of Christ, are called to be God's representatives on this earth. So what does that say about how we need to be with those who are lost? With those who are wandering off, those who are living up the wild lifestyles, who are living in such a way that we just can't accept. God is gracious. And that grace should be our hallmark also. It's not to accept sin and say that it's not sin any longer. It's not that. But it's to love people, to draw them back into the relationship, back into the family, to welcome them home as the prodigal son was welcomed home, to be glad, to be thankful that they're seeking out the Father. This is our call. This should be our hallmark. What we're known by is this kind of grace. And we're called also to see ourselves and to see one another as the Father sees us. You see how the Father sees the son, both of the sons. He sees them in such a way that they don't really see themselves or each other. I'd like to take a look at this for just a moment in our closing here. There are two stories that are told for each son. The younger son has this well-rehearsed speech, and it's the way he clearly feels. He says, I'm not worthy to be called your son any longer. If you're willing to take me back as a servant, I'll come back as a servant. But I'm not worthy to be called your son. But the father says, you are my son. And he welcomes him home. You are my son, he says. You were dead, and now you're alive. You were lost, and now you're found. Which story is true? Well, we can say, of course, we're not worthy to be called sons or children of God. We can say that. But that's not true. And it's not because we're good enough, but it's because of what Jesus Christ has done. He has made us worthy to be called children of God. And so as God looks at us, he says, no, you are not a servant. You are not unworthy. You are clean. You're perfect. You're accepted. You are my child, God says to us. But we have a hard time accepting that sometimes for ourselves. We kind of want to hold to our own stories. No, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. Of course, we're not worthy of ourselves. But we're forgetting what Jesus Christ has done. That he has made us righteous. That he has made us pure. He's made us into perfection. And we still sin. We still fail at various times, daily, on a daily basis. But what God sees in us, he sees us through Jesus Christ. In Christ. So he looks through his Son to see us, you see. And he sees perfection. So whose version of the story will you believe? The older son. He has a story about himself too. He says, I've been a slave to you, Father. I have worked like a slave. I have tried to do everything you've ordered me to do. And you've never even given me anything good to celebrate with. This is what the older son is believing. This is his story about himself. Now, is that the truth? The father doesn't sound like a slave driver to me. He sounds like a very gracious and loving father. And we know that God is a gracious and loving father. That he doesn't order us around. That he calls us and invites us. And so the older son who believes that he's been like a slave and having to be obedient and hoping that one day his father would give him something good. The father's story is this. You are and have always been my child. And we've always been together. And everything that I have is already yours. Sometimes we live like that older brother, saying, well, I'm just going to try to do the right things, and I'm going to try to be faithful, and I'm going to be good, and then someday God will bless me. And God says, I'm with you now. You're my child. I love you now. Everything I have is yours already. But we continue to live like a slave because we believe our own story as opposed to God's story. Do you see the distance that's put between the son and the father because of their attitudes or the stories that they tell of themselves? Both sons were separated from their father. One was separated by sin of trying to, and the other was separated by trying to please and impress by good deeds. But neither of them really were close to the father. They both were separated. The younger brother's sin separated him from his father. But the older brother's problem was his goodness. His attempts to be faithful. His rule-keeping. His law-abiding confidence in his own works. That actually served to distance him from his father. You see, our sins, our badness can separate us from God. That's clear. But our attempts at goodness can also separate us from God's love when we depend on our goodness and our faithfulness and our deeds for our own righteousness. Because, unfortunately, they're not going to be good enough anyway. That's why we look to Jesus Christ, our Redeemer, the one who perfects each one of us. So God tells both sinners and those who would presume righteousness the same thing. He tells us, you are my child. I love you. What's mine is yours. Come, accept my love. Accept my grace. Accept my forgiveness. And come celebrate the truth that you are accepted. And this may seem unfair, as Stephanie said, to those who work hard to do what's right. But grace, by definition, truly is unfair. And thanks be to Jesus that none of us gets what we deserve. Instead, we are all met by the same loving God with forgiveness and grace. And this, friends, is the good news. This is the good news that we have to celebrate in our own lives and to share with others. So may you truly know God's grace in these days and the days to come. Let's pray.